Welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. In these Primer episodes, we explore the insights and backgrounds of our guests to give you a bit of an idea of what they've been up to and how they got involved in the tech and venture ecosystem. Enjoy. This season of Nothing Ventured is sponsored by Odin. Odin helps angels, VCs, and founders to raise and deploy capital seamlessly. You can structure your SPVs and now run your funds, handle capital calls, portfolio management more smoothly and easily in one place. Founders use Odin to raise their entire round in a few clicks by simply sending investors a link and receiving investments immediately. Odin works with over 5,000 investors and over 150 emerging fund managers and angel syndicates globally. Head to joinodin.com to learn more. That's joinodin.com. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. Today, I'm really excited to have in the studio with me, Duncan Clark. Duncan is co-founder and CEO of Flourish, a platform with a mission of empowering everyone to tell compelling and engaging stories with data. Acquired by Australian giant Canva in 2021, Duncan is now Europe lead at Canva, where he continues to deliver on Flourish's core mission from within the Canva suite of products, whilst also helping drive Canva's growth across the continent. Duncan, absolutely wonderful to have you in the studio with me.
Very good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for joining. I appreciate it. We're going to dive straight in. So for our audience to get to know you a bit better, I'd love for you to tell us what your first job was.
My first job was, well, I guess when I was a teenager, I used to do all sorts of odd jobs, smashing up concrete floors, working in mills in Yorkshire where I grew up, all that kind of thing.
Amazing.
My first kind
we
of...
We had a farmer on recently. That was quite
is
fun.
It? Yeah. Okay. My first job, worthy of the name, I actually did a music degree years ago and worked in a music shop for a while. And then after that, my first job that relates to what I'm doing now was... when I got an editing job at Rough Guides, the travel publisher,
amazing,
who were branching out into non-travel books. So we started doing books around reference topics, you know, the internet, different types of music. And that was actually where I got into doing kind of charts and maps and data, yeah, data storytelling, which set me on the path.
Amazing. So what is that what you were doing immediately before you kind of got into the tech and venture ecosystem?
No, it was a slightly more convoluted journey than that. So I worked at Rough Guides for several years. I got into focusing particularly on books on the environment and climate change and energy. And so I ended up co-founding a little imprint, a profile books focused on that topic. And it was from there that I was invited to go and work at The Guardian, who were starting to take climate change more seriously as a sort of strategic topic. And so I ended up doing data journalism at The Guardian, which is where I really sort of cut my teeth on data storytelling.
Interesting. I think I now see the connection with Founders Factory, possibly, which I think we'll talk about in the main episode. So was what was it that then triggered your move into building Flourish? Because you obviously must have thought you're doing this sort of data storytelling at The Guardian. And obviously, I think that FT has done a really great job and especially during COVID, I think it became one of the kind of core mediums to try and explain some of the data visually, and I think they did a great job of that. But presumably that was what kind of sparked the idea for creating Flourish. Would that be
so
fair?
Yeah, I mean, so the story broadly was I was focused on reporting on a data-rich topic, which was climate change, and so more and more I was doing that through visual journalism rather than static, and increasingly through interactive visual journalism.
Yep.
And it was a great time to be doing that, because this was back in, you know, between 2008 and 2012, like that.
Yeah.
So the web browser was just suddenly becoming a powerful piece of kit that could do proper graphics. Before then, you know, you were too hampered by being weighed down by IE4 and IE5.
And bandwidth, right? And like bandwidth very hard to load.
Exactly that, yeah, as well. Yeah. So we did quite a lot of innovation there. But what I found was that the more advanced visualizations, like the really fun, experimental, new, innovative visualizations, actually required a really serious tech partner. Mm-hmm. And so I got together with Robin Houston, who'd actually built the original Guardian website back in the late 90s, when it decided that it needed a thing called a new media lab to explore this new thing called the World Wide Web.
Have they changed it since? I hope they have.
Well, when I arrived at the Guardian in 2007, actually, the back end was still Robin's back end. So it did a good decade.
Wow.
And Robin's an extraordinary technologist. And so really, we started working together as a side project on these more experimental visualizations. And then what we found is people loved them and people wanted to look at them and they got shared widely. And so people then would come to us and say, can you make us a visualization like that? So we didn't actually deliberately launch it as a business. It was more of a side project that became a business. Mm. And it was only after doing that for several years that we decided to flip it and make a product company. And that's when it became Flourish.
Amazing. I mean, actually thinking about it, I think one of I'm pretty sure there's a platform called Visual Capitalists, which sends a weekly kind of, you know, this is the big data visualization of the week. And I actually find them really intriguing because I think I'm not necessarily a visual person, but I absolutely understand, obviously, as a CFO, the power of visualization, especially of large data sets and difficult data sets, right? Like, it just helps with the narrative.
Completely. And I mean, you say you're not a visual person, but I mean, I think even people who would describe themselves as being at the non-visual end of the spectrum, we are just sort of inherently visual animals. Yeah. Like the way that our brains work, we're drawn to movement, we're drawn to shape. And, you know, a lot of what we're doing at Canva these days, we can come on to that later, is all about understanding that the world has become, as we call it, a visual economy, and that everything is becoming more and more visual. And it's hard to do anything that doesn't kind of keep up with that trend.
No, absolutely. And I think it's the New York Times, often has these sort of scrolling visual pieces that it does. And they are quite compelling, right? Because I think there's a big difference between sort of static data visualization versus interactive data visualization, which, you know, no doubt you could talk about a lot. But I'd love to understand what you think you might have been doing had you not have built Flourish and ultimately exited to Canva.
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I guess there's definitely a world in which I'd stayed focused on data journalism. And I mean, I think many of the most talented, interesting people in data visualization are actually in newsrooms.
Yeah.
And part of our sort of founding hypothesis for Flourish was that there were two schools of visualization. There's the BI tools and the Tableaus and the Power BIs, which had, you know, they were very commercially successful, but they didn't really have the audience, and people didn't love them. And then
I can definitely tell you, people don't love them.
Exactly. and then in the newsrooms, you've got people making one-off projects. It's not really scalable. It's not really a tool, but the work that they're doing is often so compelling and so interesting. So where we tried to position ourselves really was in between those two, like make it a production tool that let you do that more interesting creative stuff. So I don't know, maybe I could still be in a newsroom doing visual journalism, or maybe, you know, the early iteration where Robin and I were just making bespoke visualizations to order, it was actually a very fun creative time.
Almost doing that as a sort of a consultancy.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah. It was like a micro agency, and people would always ask us if we were going to hire extra people into it, and we consciously took a decision until we launched the product never to hire anyone, because we found that we were learning more and enjoying it more by just being very hands-on. We didn't want to try and scale an agency, which is in some sense a kind of fool's game.
No need to tell me about that. Definitely with you on that one. And so let's talk about Flourish and Canva. I mean, I think most of the audience would probably appreciate what Canva is, certainly at surface level, but it'd be great for you to kind of give us a bit of a background on what it is, who it's for, what it does better, and maybe even sort of where it's heading.
Sure. So Canva set out about 10 years ago with the aim that has been very consistent throughout, the mission to empower the world to design. Mm. And so it was set up by Mel and Cliff and Cam, the three co-founders who still run it. And what they were seeking to do was take a very fragmented design ecosystem. If you think back those 10 years, most people had no real capacity to design. Most design, like a handful of designed outputs were done by professionals in Adobe products. Most design in practice was actually done by people in Microsoft Word, dragging sort of clip art around and desperately trying to position tables and all that kind of thing.
Love making PowerPoints, yeah.
Exactly. So what Canva set out to do was actually combine all the elements of that professional ecosystem into something that was easy to use. Mm. So that meant rather than you going off and researching your photographs in a different tool and then licensing something from Shutterstock or whatever, what you do instead is you go into Canva, you drag in the elements you need, they're all there, ready to use, and you can Actually, you know what? I probably shouldn't name a competitor like that. Not even a competitor, but
so
I'm going to flip back onto that one. Maybe I'll just start from that question again.
Okay, hold on a second. James, Jesse, can we cut, edit? I'll start the question again around flourishing Canva. So most of our audience will be pretty aware of what Canva is, I think, certainly at surface level, but I'd love for you to give us a bit more background as to you know, what the product does, what it does better, who it's for, and kind of where it's heading to some extent as well. It'd be really interesting to understand from your perspective.
Sure. So Canva set out about 10 years ago with the aim of empowering the world to design. So trying to take design from being something that some professionals could do in very high-end complicated tools to being something that everyone can do in without requiring special training and special expensive software. And the kind of fundamentals of that were about consolidating a very sort of fragmented tool suite where you'd have font foundries, image libraries, you'd have page layout applications, you'd have PDF editors, you'd have all these different things. And so the idea was to put all of those in one place where anyone can design and tell their story better without needing special skills. So that's what it set out as. And it's had this unbelievable exponential growth over the last 10 years. I mean, it's kind of astonishing. It's the kind of chart where the only way to explain something that exponential is that it truly has a feedback loop. And the feedback loop for Canva is that because it is genuinely accessible and useful, then people just share it and encourage others to use it. So it's got this incredible organic growth engine. And but what's happened in that time is Canva's added more and more functionality. So what started out as, you know, you could make a flyer or a business card or a poster, these days it's very much a tool aimed at the workplace. All different sizes of companies using it, right up to kind of most of the FTSE 100. And so increasingly the way we describe it is as a visual work suite. So it has docs, it has presentations, it has video editing, collaborative video editing, it has social posts. So anything where there's a sort of visual component and what we would broadly call visual communication, you can do in that one place. So it's really about taking that democratizing mission and taking it right into companies as well.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, as someone who's not particularly good at this sort of stuff, I have used Canva on a few occasions, and yeah, it makes it very seamless to be able to do fairly, certainly from my perspective, fairly simple kind of visualizations or pieces of content. I mean, my, you know, one of my team makes kind of PDFs just using Canva, and they're very good PDFs, right? And they are, again, they are sort of data visualizations often and visual communication. So I'd love to also understand from you, what are three developments within that kind of whole framework of data visualization, visual comms, that you're excited about and maybe that Canva is bringing into the suite as well?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, I mean, I guess the obvious one, probably if anyone you ask that question to in any area at the moment, was going to start by saying AI. I mean, AI has been a complete kind of game changer for Canva. I mean, first thing to say is that Canva's interest in AI actually goes back way beyond, you know, ChatGPT and OpenAI. So Canva acquired Kaleido, a visual AI company, several years ago. They're based in Vienna, and we've got, you know, 100 people there. And it fits with the fact that what Canva's always sought to do is to make things easy and quick. So that kind of automation is the thing that AI is so powerful for. And in fact, we did a survey recently where we interviewed 4,000 leaders in the marketing space and the kind of creative space. And what we found is that most of them were already using AI. They were actually excited about it, not threatened by it. And the way they describe themselves using it was really about cutting out the grunt work,
all the administrative side, all the process stuff.
So they feel very much empowered by it rather than sort of threatened by it. And that very much aligns with how Canva has always set out to do things. And so that's been amazing. You know, we've had billions and billions of uses of our AI features in Canva. We launched something called Magic Studio a few weeks ago, which includes AI-powered features right across the suite. So it's everything from, you know, you might have a whole rich visual presentation. You can press one button and it will just convert it into any language in the world. Or you might have an image and it's just not quite filling your design and some space at the edge, so you can just drag the edges out. It will just extend the picture. So many different use cases, you know, being able to do auto text powered by AI, but having that in your brand voice, that kind of thing. So more and more, what we're doing is bringing those AI features right in across the suite.
So they're almost so that they don't become features, they are just a core part of the product.
And we refer to it internally as the AI powered visual suite, and that's really what it is. So that's a really big one. And I mean, I guess the other one, another trend, which I think is very related, is consolidation. So one thing that we've found, I mean, it goes back to that original story about Canva trying to provide a single helpful route through this fragmented ecosystem of tools. And that's a bit like AI now. Like AI is very fragmented. There's lots of different people doing very particular things with it. And but similarly, there are all these different tools where people have one tool for whiteboards, they have another tool for presentations, they have a third tool for social, they have. And so what we're trying to do at Canva is just provide something that stops people having to leap continually between these different tools. And so that applies to the very fragmented ecosystem of AI, but also to the general kind of tool space. Yeah. And I think that's been a key part of Canva's growth. You know, we launched our presentation editor a few years, and that's really, we've had billions of presentations made now.
Yeah. I've actually seen a number of pitch decks on Canva, which I mean, wasn't a surprise as such, but you know, most people sort of PDF, DocSend, that sort of thing, but they're actually sharing on Canva, built it on Canva, which is incredible. And they're actually pretty good, ultimately.
they're amazing. And there's the features that we have. I mean, I can't go too much into future features publicly, but the features that we've got lined up for that to really take what it means to give a presentation to the next level are super exciting.
Well, I will definitely be watching that space. For the meantime, Duncan, it's been great to have you here in the studio with me. I'm really looking forward to delving into some of the background and some of the stories in the main episode. But for the meantime, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.